Okay. Kevin Owens is a great tumbler. Sami Zayn is a great tumbler. They're not great workers.
Fuck you!
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to a special Mother's Day episode of the Solid Monster Sounds Off, episode 439, here for Sunday, May 8th, 2016. I am the Solid Monster. I want to take a moment to wish a happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there and to my own mother, who's been through a lot in the last year, as many of you know. She is the best. So happy Mother's Day to everybody out there. This week's show is dedicated to Joe Barnes. Joe is a member of the Sound Off family who passed away last weekend. He went by the name Bo Jarns in our Facebook group. Joe was an Army man. He served in the 1st Battalion, 506th Infantry. I know he had a young son named Ben. I want to extend my thoughts to his family and his friends. Joe wasn't much older than I am, and it's just very sad to lose somebody so young. So rest in power, my friend. I also want to give a shout out to Brandon Watts. He is an independent wrestler out here on the East Coast. Wrestled for a bunch of different promotions. One half of the tag team Milk Chocolate. He's a fan of the podcast. I've watched him do his thing at some five borough wrestling shows in the past. Really talented guy. Only 21 years old. He broke his neck in a match a couple of weeks back and had to undergo neck surgery to get it fixed. He's going to be out about 3 to 6 months. Beyond Wrestling is doing a show as a fundraiser for him on May 29th at 2 p.m. in Providence, Rhode Island. For every ticket sold, the promotion is donating $5 to go towards his medical expenses. I know Matt Riddle against Tommaso Ciampa has been added to that show. You can find more information on the Beyond Wrestling Facebook page. You can drop Brandon a note if you'd like to on Twitter, at OhMyWatts. I just wanted to mention that here and just say get well soon. And also, best wishes to Bobby Heenan. Man, this has been a depressing week. Bobby Heenan had another fall. He's had quite a few of those in recent years. His wife Cynthia on Twitter said they were keeping him in the hospital a little bit longer because his blood pressure was very low. Last I saw, he was still in the hospital. I don't know if he's been sent home yet or not. We're all sending some positive vibes to the brain. One of the greatest of all time. A legend in every sense of the word. So get well soon, Bobby. Audible is still offering listeners of this podcast a trial of the Audible service. Free for 30 days if you use our link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. We've been getting a ton of signups. Had kind of a soft week last week. So if you haven't sampled the service yet, if you think you might have a friend or a family member who might get use out of it, by all means, spread that link around. They can choose from over 180,000 different books. There are a lot of wrestling books up there, some of which are audiobooks that have the audio done by the wrestlers themselves, like Hulk Hogan's book, JTG's book. But there's a ton of them up there. Shawn Michaels, Daniel Bryan, Brock Lesnar, Chris Jericho, Dusty Rhodes. So audibletrial.com/solomonster is the link to use. You can sample the service. And if for any reason you're not happy with it or you don't think it's good enough for you, just be aware that you get to keep your free audiobook no matter what. That belongs to you once you cash in on it. So use our link to do so. Also, we have a brand new shirt up in our Pro Wrestling Tees store, prowrestlingtees.com/solomonstersoundsoff. We have our new Sound Off Guy shirt. I'm not a good guy. I'm not a bad guy. I'm a Sound Off Guy. Figure, you know, that phrase is so cheesy, we might as well get some use out of it. So if you want to pick up your own Sound Off Guy shirt, you can do so. It's up in the store right now. And last but not least here, if you want to make a PayPal donation, you are free to do so on thesolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out. I want to say thank you this week to Yvonne Bruiser Balick, John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, the Marietta Mahler, Alexandru Mata, the Five Tool Player Adam Bartolo, Ladies Man Levi Daly, Hytham the Equalizer Al Nawasser, the Scottish Assassin Colin Kayer, Dream Chaser Chauncey Curry, Stephen Miami Vice, All-Action Reginald Davis II, Misfit Miguel Mendoza, The Chosen Son, Andre Smith, Anti-Authority Austin Ireland, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, and the Irish Assassin, Connor Grennan. Thank you very much. I did mention that this was some of these donations came in before I put that video up on YouTube, and other people donated to the show anyway, which I appreciate. But I put a video up earlier in the week because I had an idea. In lieu of donations this past week to the Sound Off, I asked that you make some donations, if you had the means to do so, to Joe Doering's GoFundMe campaign. This was after Alex Riley had tweeted me and said I probably didn't have $5 to my name to get him on my show. So it gave me an idea, and I put a video up asking everybody to donate at least $5 to Joe's GoFundMe campaign. Joe has wrestled now for a long, long time, many years. He spent some time in TNA a long time ago, but he spent a good number of years in Japan. He won the Triple Crown in All Japan a couple of years ago. It was going great for him. And then he got diagnosed with brain cancer, had to have surgery. And now, of course, the medical expenses are racking up. He's undergoing chemo and radiation. He's fallen on some tough times. You can still make a donation to Joe's GoFundMe campaign. I think it may have just passed the halfway point. They were looking for 40,000. I think they've passed 20 or 21 by now. And I want to say thank you to everybody who saw the video, passed it around, made a donation. I'm proud to say that we raised over $600 and counting, and that's at least $600 that I know of. Some people wanted to make anonymous donations, which is absolutely fine. Whether you want it to be anonymous or not, you can go to GoFundMe.com/Joe Doering, D-O-E-R-I-N-G. It's not too late. If you want to make a donation and help Joe out, you can do so. Just wanted to say thank you to everybody who made a donation of any kind this week. It's very generous of you. Payback was last weekend. I'm not going to get into it here. I did do a post-pay-per-view review on our YouTube channel. It is a YouTube exclusive, so if you want to listen to that Sound Off Extra, you got to go on there. YouTube.com/TheSolemnMonster. Hit the subscribe button. That way, when videos like that go up, you will be notified. And always remember that when these reviews go up, if you click in the description underneath the video, there is always a link to the MP3 for those of you who want to download the audio. Maybe you want to load it up and listen to it on the go. You don't want to watch it on YouTube. You got to go in the description of the video. You can download the audio from there. I still, to this day, I have people asking me, are you going to push it out to the feed? Is there an MP3? When these types of videos go up, assume that there is always an MP3. And that's where you can find it. I will say this, though, about the show. You know, boy, they're talking about this as some kind of new era now, right? That's the new storyline. It's a new era. The new era looks a lot like the old era to me, doesn't it? I love how on a pay-per-view where they rehash the Montreal Screwjob from, it's almost 20 years now. It's going to be 20 years next year since they did that finish. And on that same exact show, they dubbed it the new era. You know, the one thing that never changes is that it's all about the McMahons. In this case, now it's Shane and Stephanie and Vince pitting them against each other. It's all about the McMahons. Even this camp WWE. You know, I watched that first episode, and just like Payback, it's no different. It's all about the McMahons. Although, in this case, that may be a good thing. Because Vince McMahon was the best part of that entire show. Vince McMahon was about the only thing I could rave about when it comes to that show. So hopefully he continues to be a featured character. I'll probably check out episode 2. I can't say that I was overly impressed. Let's get to the big news this week. Top story, there was a bloodletting in WWE this week. They released 8 performers. And I'm going to go through the list here. It's a long one. We really haven't seen this kind of house cleaning in WWE in a long, long time. Wade Barrett is gone. This was expected for a few months now. Barrett's been off TV ever since the League of Nations kicked him out. The news leaked back in February that he was not going to be re-signing with WWE when his contract was up in June. Barrett posted on Twitter after the word came down this week that he had made the decision last August that he was not going to re-sign. And his plan is to take some time off from wrestling. He wants to expand his horizons. And then he'll be back in wrestling when the time is right. There is no reason a guy who looks and talks the way that Wade Barrett does cannot be a top-level star in another promotion. He absolutely can. Right now, you know, there's a wrestling boom going on over there in the UK. I could see him in a place like Revolution Pro doing very well. Japan, maybe. Maybe. I see no reason why he can't do well there. You know, of all the names that were released, I would say that Barrett is probably the biggest disappointment in terms of how far he could have gone. I mean, there were a lot of disappointments on this list, but in terms of how far this guy truly could have gone in the company, I think Barrett's the one. You know, I thought he would be the first British-born WWE champion or world champion at some point. There was a time about 5 years ago on this podcast where I said that I could see and I wanted to see Barrett and Sheamus. Believe it or not, there was a time I wanted to see Sheamus. Barrett and Sheamus going out there and beating the crap out of each other for the world title at a WrestleMania. You know, maybe not the WWE title, but the world title for sure. This was back when they had two belts. Injuries, unfortunately, plagued this guy for a good part of his run there. He had the elbow injury, which was just a complete freak occurrence. That was when the Big Show threw, I think it was Dolph Ziggler, out of the ring, and Truth and Barrett were out there trying to catch him. And I think Dolph landed on Barrett's arm or something, but he just freaked the hell out, and he knew right away he was hurt. And it came at a terrible time. This was like a month before WrestleMania. I think they had supposedly big plans for him that year. It was just a total freak thing. He had the shoulder injury. I think actually that was when, was it Swagger or somebody threw him into the barricade? And again, kind of a freak injury. I think it was nerve damage was the most recent thing. He had some kind of problem with his neck that kept him out. This was a few months ago. But, you know, look, he's a big guy. He's a tall guy. He's very well spoken. Barrett was good on the microphone even back when he first showed up on NXT. Back when NXT was a reality show on Sci-Fi. He was good even then. You know, he won that first season of NXT. Then they did that great Nexus angle on Raw back in 2010. One of the most memorable angles they've ever done. John Cena ended up beating them at SummerSlam, and that was the beginning of the end for those guys. I thought they would give Barrett the Money in the Bank briefcase in 2012, I think it was. Actually, it might have been the year he had the elbow dislocation. But never happened. He won the Intercontinental title a few times, but I don't think really until Daniel Bryan won it. And you could argue even after that, even after Bryan won it, I don't think you know, winning the Intercontinental title was really a good thing. I think it kind of became WWE's bad luck charm for a lot of guys. That and winning King of the Ring. You know, you did not want to do either one of those things, and this guy did both. Talk about the kiss of death. He won King of the Ring and did nothing but lose after that. I remember watching Barrett and Sheamus on one of those Table for Three episodes, and they were openly joking how bad it was for their careers after each of them won King of the Ring. The Bad News Barrett thing, I thought, you know, it was very entertaining while it lasted, but he just never could make it to that next level. And I think there's just a ton of wasted potential there of what might have been with this guy. Wasted potential, though, is a common theme with this list that we're going through here. That's actually a great segue into the next entry, the one that really made me angry, which was Damian Sandow. All I want to know is this. Whose wife did this guy fuck? Can somebody tell me that? I mean, Jesus Christ. Here's a guy who did everything that was asked of him and made it work every single time. And still, he got railroaded. Now, a lot of people may not realize that he was in WWE many, many years ago. He left. I don't know if he got released or whatever, but he left. He came back. And he came back doing the intellectual savior of the masses gimmick with the robe and the towel. He had a towel, too, I think. And that got over pretty well. I think even more so when he was doing the Road Scholars team with Cody Rhodes. I think they really started to gel very well together. And then it ended. And I don't know. I mean, did Cody get hurt? I honestly offhand don't remember why the team came to an end. I want to say it had to do with maybe Cody getting hurt, only because I know, I remember Sandow, I think, just like temporarily started doing this whole thing where he was looking for an apprentice, right? He would like look out to the fans and say, who wants to be my apprentice? And even that, it was supposed to be a temporary thing, but even that got over. And then that ended, like pretty much everything with this guy, when it started to gain traction. And it was very obvious they told him to stop doing a lot of the stuff that was very unique to his character. They told him to stop doing the cartwheels and stop wearing the pink tights and stop doing this and stop doing that. Not because I was eavesdropping on the conversation backstage. I know this because I watch this guy on TV. He's doing all of these things. He's pretty popular. He's very entertaining. And all of a sudden, all of it just stops. He just stops doing it. It was unique to the character, and then one day, it's done. You don't just strip away all of the unique aspects of your character unless somebody tells you to do so. So they did that. Finally, this guy wins Money in the Bank, and then proceeds to lose to John Cena. I remember them having a pretty damn good match on Raw. People were behind Sandow, even though he was the heel. I mean, that's pretty much the story with anybody who's in the ring with John Cena. So he has this great match, and look, I don't know that I expected him to beat John Cena. I don't remember what I predicted at the time. I doubt that I predicted he would beat him, but, you know, he lost to John Cena. Nothing to hang your head in shame over. Everybody does. But my hope was, okay, now they're going to do something meaningful with the guy. He was in a match with the face of the company. He had this great performance. He's clearly got some kind of connection going with the fans that you can't manufacture, okay? Hello, Roman Reigns. You can't just manufacture a relationship between the crowd and the performer. It has to just kind of come naturally, and it did with this guy. So instead of squandering it, right, take advantage of that. Do something with him. Maybe he's not going to be the world champion, but why can't he be the U.S. champ? Or why can't he be the Intercontinental champ? Why can't he at least be in that mix? So I foolishly was hoping that they would do something with the guy, and they did nothing with him. He fell into this thing later on as the Miz's stunt double, which sounds like the absolute dumbest idea ever. And to be fair, it was pretty dumb. But it was pretty damn entertaining, I'll tell you that much. This guy made it a lot more entertaining than I ever thought it would be. And it got him over more than The Miz. Mizdow became one of the only must-see things about watching Monday Night Raw. He was so fucking great in that role. And maybe that was part of the problem, that he got over more than The Miz did. I don't know. I think at one point, even Sandow was like answering tweets a few months ago, and people were asking him, why are you not on TV? Why are they not doing anything with you? And his response was, maybe I'm too entertaining. You know what? Maybe he was. Maybe he was too entertaining for his own good. He was too good. That was his problem. But with the Miz and Mizdow stuff, they built and they built and they built it up to where you wanted so badly to see this guy turn on The Miz. And I wanted that Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal last year at 31 to come down to him and Miz. And the Miz would demand, all right, now you do what I tell you to do. You get over that top rope and you get out of the ring and let me win this match. And instead, Mizdow would, you know, the fans would be telling him, no, 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 no. And he would stand up to the Miz. And in the end, he would eliminate the Miz. And he would get this big win at WrestleMania in the Battle Royal. Big celebration. It would have been so great. But I guess it was more important for them to get their photo op of the Big Show standing there next to the statue with his arms crossed, just like Andre. They had a real chance there to get this guy a big win and maybe, you know, elevate him to like upper mid-card status or mid-card. It's not a bad place to be on the card. Not everybody can be in main events wrestling the top guys. I'm not saying Damian Sandow could wrestle circles around a guy like an AJ Styles or a Seth Rollins, because he can't. But I think somebody like Sandow brings a lot of other things to the table that those guys don't. And there's a place for that on that show. On that 3-hour show, there is a place for that. But I mean, seriously, I think the honest to God truth, I don't think he was ever supposed to get over the way he did in that role. I mean, I really do. I doubt the idea was that this guy was going to go out there and he's going to outshine The Miz. But he did. And so they ran with it. They did the breakup, but then they didn't know what to do with the guy. Because it's not like they spent more than 5 fucking minutes in the back thinking about, hey, what can we do with Damian Sandow? The problem was, he was too good at his job. He was so good in the comedy role, that's all they ever saw him as. You know, I mean, when they have their blinders on, it's so frustrating as a fan to watch somebody like that just stagnate and do nothing. They let these guys stagnate for so long. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, he's a comedy guy, and he can't draw money, so we won't focus on him. Then you don't focus on him, and he stagnates for years and years until people are conditioned to see him as nothing more than a comedy guy. No shit. And yet, the guy was still over. I mean, when he showed up on Raw a few weeks ago, there were plenty of reports from the building that he got one of the biggest reactions of anybody on the show. And how that even happens is amazing to me, because the guy, and I made this comment a while back, the guy has been a ghost. Didn't I say that last week? I was talking about Sandow. He has been a ghost. But then he's like Casper. He appears, and the people go nuts for him. That's pretty special. There aren't a lot of people who would be out of the public eye like that and reduced to nothing and still get that kind of love from the crowd. And once you succeed in doing what they did to this guy, where you condition people to think, well, this guy's nobody, you know, he's nothing special, and you don't do anything with him for years and years and years, you get to the point where, okay, now we cut the dead weight, we get rid of the guy. I mean, it's a vicious cycle. We've seen this happen a lot of times with a lot of guys before, and it was no different with Sandow. They beat him down and beat him down and beat him down, and now it's like, all right, we'll cut him. We really don't have any use for this guy. I mean, I think Barrett had more potential as a top guy than Sandow did. I don't see Sandow, you know, wrestling for the world title, headlining a WrestleMania main event or even a co-main event or anything like that. I think, you know, Barrett did have that potential at one point, but Sandow is the one that still pissed me off the most. I want to know what it is that this guy did. He obviously crossed the wrong person backstage. There's no other explanation for it. To just not put him on TV at all. It wasn't even like he was on TV just jobbing out every single week. To not even acknowledge his existence. The only silver lining in all this is that I don't think Sandow is going to be hurting for work. At least not in the near term. I think there's a lot of money to be made for him doing indies and conventions and stuff like that if he wants to. I think he's going to do just fine. You know, at least now he won't be wasting away sitting in the back every week, watching everybody else on a monitor. But you have a guy people want to see, and you hide him away from the rest of the world. It just doesn't make any sense. And I'm hoping, you know, one day the story will come out on what happened here, because somebody had it out for this guy, and I want to know why. And while we're on the subject of guys getting railroaded, that brings me to Alex Riley. Alex Riley was on the cut list this week. Alex Riley has had his issues with me recently, as you all know. So why now? Why was he released now? I don't know. I don't have any idea. But he was clearly very frustrated in the role that they had for him of late, which really wasn't much of a role at all, and he wanted to do more. Riley spent almost a decade in WWE. It doesn't feel that long, but he's been around for a while. And look, I take no glee in seeing someone lose their job. In fact, I feel sorry for Alex Riley. Because here's a guy who had a good look, had some size, and he could talk. Nobody ever doubted that he could talk. So you ask yourself, what happened? One minute he's managing the WWE champion. He's mixing it up with Stone Cold Steve Austin. And then he stands up to The Miz, beats the crap out of him. That was probably the peak of Alex Riley in WWE. He had an entire building chanting Riley. And then, aside from a few matches where he tagged up with John Cena, I don't remember him doing a goddamn thing after that. He would lose all the time. Then he transitioned over to being an announcer, which he was pretty good at, but he wanted to wrestle. I mean, he was desperately trying to get back to, you know, wrestling again. He started a whole Free Riley campaign on Twitter. It finally put him back in the ring. And again, they did nothing with him. His biggest claim to fame in the last 3 years is being kicked by Kevin Owens as Owens ran away from Finn Balor. But why? What happened? For years, there have been rumors of some sort of heat or beef between Alex Riley and John Cena. Okay, more from John Cena's side. Something happened between the two of them, and he ended up on Cena's shit list. Other wrestlers have openly talked about this. This is not just random, you know, speculation or dirt sheet talk. Okay, other wrestlers who were in the company at the time have left since. They've been asked the question. They've commented on it. They've talked about this. JTG and Tyler Rex are two names that come to mind. Again, these are guys who work for WWE at the same time that Alex Riley did when he was going through all this. Guys who in some cases, saw the abuse that this guy was taking. They confirm it did happen. So I think John Cena had it out for the guy for whatever reason. And when you're the top guy, you know, with that comes a great deal of power and influence. You've got the ear of some very important people. You're a very important part of the company. John Cena was a hell of a lot more important to the company than Alex Riley was. Alex Riley was expendable, and John Cena was not. And again, just going off of what others have said, those who were in that locker room, I wasn't in the locker room, they were. You know, the Tyler Rex comments, for example. You know, Cena was on Alex Riley's ass day in and day out. He would go through Riley's bag. He would yell at him for the type of, like, vitamins and supplements that he found in there that he was taking. Or Riley would have a great match. He would come back through the curtain. Cena would be there waiting for him, and he would just embarrass him in front of the rest of the locker room. And who knows? Maybe Riley was being a dick. Maybe he did or said something to deserve it. Who knows? But the fact is, you know, if you've got a guy like John Cena talking behind this guy's back, you can kill someone's career that way. I'm not just talking about, like, their push. You can kill their entire career. I'm sure lots of careers have been derailed because of backstage political bullshit over the years. Look at Kenny Dykstra. He's another one. Maybe the most talented, or one of the most talented from the whole Spirit Squad bunch. Had a lot of potential. Another one where John Cena was allegedly involved in all the drama that went down there. I'm not going to rehash it or get into it. You can look it up online if you want to yourself. But all of a sudden, his career hits a wall. And soon, he's gone. Sound familiar? And, you know, again, I'm sure there's plenty of examples of this sort of thing happening. It's not just John Cena. I don't want to make it seem like I'm just picking on him. Although, I must admit, I am still appalled by that story JTG told in his first book about the face of the company. See, he didn't name him. Basically, here's what happened. I'll recap this story just because it still blows my mind. So basically, JTG had given an interview to a writer for WWE Magazine. This was many years ago. And he used the words loyalty and respect to describe his partner, right? Shad was his partner in Crime Time. As soon as he said those words, he realized what he had done. He realized the mistake he had just made. And he asked the guy, the writer, please don't use that. Use any other words. Please don't use what I just said. Just disregard it. And the guy said, sure, no problem. But, you know, of course, he ended up using it anyway. And this was around the same time that JTG was a huge Bret Hart fan growing up. He was getting his own pair of shades, like the Hitman used to have. And this was a big deal to him. This was like his first big piece of merch, at least as a singles guy, because I think by this point he might have been doing the singles thing. I'm not sure. Anyway, he's all excited. He's getting these glasses soon. They're going to be up in WWE shop. He's in the bathroom at the arena one night, and he hears, and again, he doesn't name people in the first book that he did, but he drops enough hints about who he's talking about that you'd have to be pretty fucking stupid not to figure out who he's talking about. It's pretty obvious he's talking about Cena. So Cena comes up to the stall, I guess, and he's like, hey, JTG, is that you in there? He's like, you know, I read that interview you did with WWE Magazine. Very interesting choice of words. And you know how you see those memes online? It's like it was at that moment that he knew he had fucked up. Well, it was at that moment that JTG knew he had fucked up. And he tried to explain what happened, and Cena just goes, look, cool, you know, I understand. It happens, right? These magazine guys can twist your words sometimes. No problem. He goes, but you know this can't go unpunished. There have to be repercussions for what happened here. You know those spiffy new shades that you've got coming out soon on WWE Shop? Yeah, those are going to be on hold for a little while. It's almost like, all right, we're going to put these shades on hold and you and I, we're cool. It's all water under the bridge. So, yeah, he goes, those shades are going to be on hold for a while. Unfortunately for JTG, they're still on hold to this day. They never did come out. But I just remember being so appalled when I read that story. It's just the pettiness of it. You know what I mean? Like, is this real life? Like, a guy in his position, does this sort of thing really happen? It's like, yeah, actually it does. And you know, for all the great things that, that John Cena does, all the Make-A-Wish stuff, obviously, it just, he and Hogan, they're just, they're so eerily similar in a lot of ways. You know, Hogan also, Hogan did all the charity stuff back in his day, right? Before Cena came along, Hogan was probably still the Make-A-Wish king for WWE. He used to do those all the time. He'd go visit sick kids in hospitals. But, you know, but then you hear stories like that, the one I just told, and you think of some of the careers of guys who really could have been something, that, that could have gone far and never did. And I'm sure in some cases it was their own fault. They may have done or said something stupid, but in other cases, maybe it wasn't. Maybe they just got on someone's bad side, or they, you know, they were threatening someone's position or something. I mean, a guy like JTG is not threatening John Cena's position, but then again, you know, John Cena, big merchandise seller, you know, who knows? Who knows what happened there? Who knows what the mindset is? I don't even want to try to figure this out. It's just, you know, I think you've got to be wired a certain way to be a top guy in WWE. Yeah, I mean, these are probably some of the most paranoid people in the world. Like, people have said Austin, for example, was a very paranoid person, like, when he was on top. But, you know, they're also not afraid to step on your skull if they have to. I mean, that just makes it more amazing a guy like a Daniel Bryan ever made it to the top, even just for a few months in WWE. I mean, he's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. You hear it from everybody who has interacted with him. I met him, same thing, nicest guy you'll ever meet. No ambition, right? That's another one. Didn't he score like the lowest of everybody on the roster in that ambition test? I think he talked about it in his book. And he still made it to the very top. You know, but I just think you have to be wired a certain way to get to the top in that company and stay there. It's fascinating. But I got off topic here, I know. My point is this. I get the sense that Alex Riley may have made an enemy or two, and that probably had as much to do with his career hitting the skids as anything, and becoming an announcer instead when he clearly still wanted to wrestle. Once he went back down to NXT, that was it. I mean, the die was cast for this guy. He just toiled down there for years until they decided he had no usefulness left for them, and they got rid of him. And maybe one day, Riley can answer that question himself. You know, the question of what happened now that he has the freedom to do so, whether it's on this show or someone else's show. Despite what he may think, I never did say that the guy had no talent. He's another one who, he had the tools, but he never really got a fair shake. Also released were Cameron, who I think was doomed after she tweeted her support for Ryback's comments, which I'm going to talk about here in a second. They haven't used her in a long time anyway. Hornswoggle, who I don't think we've seen him since he got suspended last year on a wellness violation. 10 years he spent with the company. It's actually a hell of a run. El Torito, who was made to be a joke from day one. I mean, I remember watching his matches on YouTube when he first debuted, because I remember hearing how great this guy was, this midget wrestler, but I'd never seen any of his matches before. So I watched it, and I was just blown away. And not just matches with, like, other minis, but, like, matches with regular stars. He'd go in there, and he'd steal the show. And then he debuts, and they put him in a fucking bull costume. It's like, okay, I see what this guy's role is going to be. I mean, seriously, they could have built, and I've ranted about Raw and how mundane and how much the same everything feels, and, you know, it's like they want their show to be a variety show, but they don't give you any variety. How about giving us some variety? How about having a minis division, and then have this division, and have this on there? You know, they can come up with different concepts. The minis division is just one. And they've tried the minis division before, even in the last, like, decade. They did it on SmackDown. They had, like, Super Porky, I think, was part of it. It didn't last very long because they treated it like a joke. You know, and it was just an afterthought, and so they ended it. I'm talking, like, actually having a minis division and taking this guy and building it around him. You know, making him the star of it. But, you know, that's not why they brought him in. They brought him in for the laughs. One of the many failed gimmicks they've given to Primo and Epico. Now they're going to be coming back as, Puerto Rican travel agents or something now, and that will fail too. But anyway, so he got the boot, and hopefully he'll be better off for it. He'll go and work and be respected somewhere else. Santino Marella was released. I didn't even realize he was back under contract. I thought he was only back for sporadic appearances. I know he's keeping very busy these days with his Battle Arts Academy up in Canada. And last but not least, Zeb Coulter was let go, the former Dirty Dutch Mantel. It's too bad because he's a great mouthpiece for somebody. I mean, I'm thinking in my mind, who could they have put him with? Like, keep him around and put him with somebody new. Who would be the best act to put him with? I've become a big fan of the Revival in NXT. And actually, Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder both, you know, they speak fine. I don't know that they necessarily need a mouthpiece. I do think somebody like Zeb Coulter probably would have been a good fit for them. And I think, they could have benefited them to have him as part of the act. So I would have loved to see him with the Revival. I really can't think of anybody else offhand that he would have went with. I'll tell you something right now. I still to this day don't understand what Vince McMahon's logic was behind putting Zeb Coulter with fucking Alberto Del Rio. Here's a guy. I mean, these two, you talk about polar opposites and two guys that are absolutely not alike in any way, shape, or form, okay? And Del Rio, of course, leaves the company. He goes and becomes a big, big star in Mexico. He joins Lucha Underground. He's wrestling other, you know, promotions. He had a short run in Ring of Honor. I mean, this guy was in demand. He was one of the hottest performers in the entire world for a few months there. He comes back to WWE. On night one, he's cheered like this returning hero, but they wanted him as a heel. So he beats John Cena with a kick to the head. I'd say the first week or two, you know, he was going out there like a machine. I mean, he was kicking ass. I mean, he was stiffing people. Maybe not stiffing people, but he looked like it would not be any fun to be in the ring with him. He was kicking ass. And it didn't take very long before he became just another guy. And now nobody gives a shit about Alberto Del Rio. And he's a talented guy. He could have been, you know, a lot more than, even what he was in his last run. I mean, he had some real momentum. He came off as a star, and now he doesn't, because that's what happens in WWE. Brock Lesnar, at least, has been able to maintain that aura because he's not around very often, and he does what he wants. You think Brock Lesnar is going to let them put him out there and you know, treat him the way they treat somebody like Alberto Del Rio? Are you out of your mind? Of course not. Brock Lesnar is only going to show up a few times a year. He'll do what you want him to do, if it's within reason. If you want him to do something fucking stupid, you're probably going to have a problem on your hands. So Brock Lesnar, at least, he wins. That's another thing. He's able to win and win and win. And so, wow, what a shock, right? Somebody who only shows up a few times a year and does nothing but win is probably the most popular guy in the company. What a fucking shock that is. So talk about squandering whatever it was they had with Del Rio when he first came back. But that whole pairing of Del Rio and Coulter, it didn't make any sense then. It still doesn't make any sense now. Absolutely no sense at all. That was apparently a Vince McMahon idea. What his logic was, I have no idea. So if you're going to use somebody like a Zeb Coulter, at least put him with an act, a team, a person, whoever, that it kind of makes sense. And to me, I think that would have been a good fit. I think he still had something to contribute. But I guess he'll have to contribute somewhere else because he's no longer on the roster. But that, I mean, I still, that whole Del Rio, Zeb Coulter thing, it's just so puzzling to me. I mean, that made about as much sense as putting Ricardo Rodriguez with Rob Van Dam. Another pairing that didn't last very long. I mean, sometimes these decisions, it just makes you scratch your head. Now, Ryback, I mentioned Ryback a little while ago. Ryback and Adam Rose, two names that have clashed recently with WWE. They were not among the list of people who were cut, at least not yet. Adam Rose, there really is no update on Adam Rose. He finally delivered that doctor's note he had teased a few weeks ago. He said he was going to post it online. He did. And then he took it down. In fact, he took all of his previous tweets down where he spoke out about what happened, and you think, okay, somebody got to him, and I think that's probably what happened. I would imagine the company probably told him to take it down, but he put them back up, and last I checked, the doctor's note and everything was still up, and, you know, whatever's going to be is going to be. He's willing to take the consequences as they come. I get the sense that he's kind of at the point where he just doesn't give a shit. And he really feels like he was wronged. I think he claims he had a prescription, a legal prescription for Adderall from his doctor. He was diagnosed ADHD. And so that's his position on the issue. He feels he did nothing wrong. His name was sullied. He's going to stand up for himself. And, you know, if that's the case, then I salute him. Good for him. You know, you got your name being dragged through the mud. If you didn't do anything wrong, then he has every right to defend himself and not, you know, not be silenced. And I think it would have looked really, really bad, even if WWE wants to just cut bait on that guy, like they're not happy with him, let's say. Now is not the time to be doing that. It just would have looked really, really bad. That's why I think Adam Rose is safe for now. Long term, I'm not so sure. Ryback is a different issue. Last we saw Ryback, he was losing to Kalisto on the pre-show. He is the pre-show stopper. You know, it's funny, when they had the match on the pre-show, I wasn't paying attention at first, so I didn't see him come out with the weight belt that said pre-show stopper on it. I saw the screenshots people posted after the fact. I fucking loved that. I thought that was just very clever. But he went out there and had one of the best matches on the entire show. In fact, I would say that Ryback and Kalisto probably had the third best match maybe on that pay-per-view. If you count all the matches, I think Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn may have had the best. AJ Styles and Roman Reigns had a hell of a match. I might put Ryback and Kalisto right behind them. I thought they had a great match. And if that's his last ever appearance in WWE, you know what? That's a hell of a way for Ryback to go out, even though he lost. You know, it's one of the better Ryback matches I've seen in a long-ass time. So his issue is this. He has been dealing directly with Vince McMahon for a while now on a new contract. They want him to sign a new contract. His deal is up, I think he said, in July or August. I think August. And reports came out that said it's a money issue. They're very far apart on money. Ryback came out. He posted a very lengthy blog on his Tumblr page. And the first thing he does is he denies all the reports that it really has anything to do with money. And then he proceeds to talk about money. So I think what he's trying to say is, you know, the perception is it's all about money. And to him, money is part of it, obviously. There's a concern over that. But it's a lot more than just money. I think that's what he's trying to say. And he goes on to write about all these different things. First of all, I said on Twitter when Ryback posted this blog, which you read this thing and it's like you think, okay, this is career suicide for this guy. I applaud him. I said I applaud him for speaking up. I never said that I agreed with everything he was saying. That's a different issue. But I do applaud him for speaking up and doing so when most people, you know, even in his position, I mean, wherever they are on the card, if you're working for WWE, you don't want to speak out of turn. But he's at a point now where, you know, he's saved his money and he's not happy and he just doesn't care. And I think that's when you really have power, right? When you don't give a shit, that's where the power really comes into play. You're not afraid. You're not intimidated. You're not worried about losing your job. If you lose your job, that's okay. I had a good run. I have a lot of money. I'll be fine. That's power. And Ryback has power right now. If they want him back, they're going to have to fight for him. So I want to read a little bit of what he said here. I'm going to paraphrase part of this. I'm not going to read the entire thing. But this is what he said. Ryback says, "It blows my mind how in a sport in which matches are predetermined from a company standpoint, winners are paid so much more than losers. Every single person who works for WWE from top to bottom is absolutely just as valuable as the next. The winners cannot win unless the losers go out there and agree to lose to them." And that is true. If somebody doesn't want to lose, that's a problem. This notion that everybody top to bottom in WWE on the food chain is equally as valuable, of course, is just nonsense. I don't believe that. I don't even know if... Well, whatever. Maybe he really does believe that. I'm sure he's very frustrated, and maybe he has a right to be. But, you know, to insinuate that somebody like John Cena has the same value as, let's say, Zack Ryder... Zack Ryder may be more well-liked by a segment of the audience than John Cena is, but by no means is Zack Ryder as valuable to the company as John Cena. So I think we can forget that. He goes on here, he says, "Obviously things have always been this way, but does that make them right? Why is it a guy who is told he is going to go out and lose and does everything he is told be paid not only less, but much less than said winner over a period of time? Every single performer in WWE sacrifices the same amount of time from home and their families, and every single man or woman goes out there and does what they're told. Looking at this formula, though, losers turn into what the fans like to call jobbers, and their value decreases in the company's eyes because before you know it, they get released. For what? For doing exactly as they are told. personally seeing my money go down over the years, even though I was working as much as ever, and being denied magazine covers and other projects, as well as watching my role diminish no matter what I did or how hard I tried, takes its toll on a human. Being told no matter how hard I work or how good I get doesn't always pay off is something I fucking refuse to ever believe in my life. I am a creative being, and being restricted time and time again is no way to live life. This isn't solely about money. It's about commitment. Commitment to a guy who fucking cares and who loves this more than anything in the world and wants to know that his passion, his efforts, and his determination is constantly, or to constantly improve, I should say, is going to be recognized and taken care of. WWE may well release me, which if that's the case, so be it. If we work things out, a lot needs to change as I am not living in fear and creatively cannot continue to live a life that limits me creatively. I have many other interests and passions and have been very smart with my finances over the years. So there's a lot there to digest. Like I said before, this whole notion that everybody from top to bottom is of equal value to the company, I don't buy that for a second. But I think there is a lot of truth to what he's saying, and I agree with him on this. And this is where I think, I'm sure a lot of guys in the company, not just Ryback, are very frustrated. He makes the point that, you know, the only, basically the reason why a John Cena or a Roman Reigns or a, well, not Triple H, but like an Undertaker or somebody like that, the reason those people are making the kind of money they're making is because Vince McMahon wanted to push them. They were the ones that he chose. He saw something in them and said, these are the guys that I want to be my top guys. And so being pushed as top guys, you're getting main events on TV, you're getting main events on pay-per-view, you're going to be front and center on the magazine and the program, you're going to be at the press conferences, you're going to get all these opportunities that a guy like a Ryback might not get. And so the company is effectively saying, we are going to push you, and therefore you're going to make, let's say, X number of dollars. Ryback over here, who's busting his ass and wants to be in that spot, and maybe could be in that spot, we don't really see you in that same light. So we're going to keep you down here. And even though you're working your ass off every bit as much as, let's say, Dean Ambrose is going to be paid, I'm just making up figures here, we're going to pay Ambrose over the course of the year $1.2 million, and we're going to pay Ryback, you know, $650,000. I can understand his frustration in that because it's out of his control. The company is making the decision themselves that we want to push Wrestler X, and Wrestler X, in turn, is going to be paid a lot more than Wrestler Z, who we don't see on that same level. So, yeah, that's true. You've got a lot of guys on the roster, I'm sure, who are busting their ass, who are not going to make the same amount of money. And that it's a frustrating position for them to be in. I understand that. And here's where I agree with Ryback, and I can agree with him on this. When Ryback was first getting over all those years ago, you remember the push? He was beating two guys at once, three guys at once on TV every single week in those handicap matches. John Cena got hurt. I think he had an elbow injury. He was supposed to have a Hell in a Cell match with CM Punk for the title. Instead, they gave that spot to Ryback. And I think it was as much a test of Ryback as anything, because let's see how this guy does. This was his first pay-per-view main event. Ryback was still relatively new in that character at the time. He had not had a big match like this before. This is a big, big opportunity for Ryback. He went in there with CM Punk. The match, I don't remember the match being, you know, all that great. And the finish sucked. Well, that's not Ryback's fault. But apparently that pay-per-view, that Hell in a Cell show, did unbelievably well. They were not expecting it to do as well as it did. The people bought into Ryback. They were into the character. You know, he was like a modern-day Goldberg, like a PG WWE version of Goldberg. Here's a guy, you know, bald guy goes in there, big, jacked up, beating the hell out of people, who's undefeated. Now he's getting a title shot. And WWE, they painted themselves in a corner because now you had CM Punk as the champion. They didn't want to beat CM Punk, it was, you know, that late in the year, because he had this you know, year-plus reign going, and they wanted The Rock to be the guy to take the championship off of him. So what do? Do you put the title on Ryback but then get the belt back on Punk a month later? Do you just beat Ryback clean? What do? Well, the only thing Ryback really had going for him at the time was the fact that he was unbeaten. He was this unstoppable monster. Once the monster got stopped, and he got stopped no less by a fucking low blow by Brad Maddox and then rolled up like a fucking goof. Once that happened, that was it. His value just tanked. And, you know, he never had that kind of performance again. I mean, I think he was in the main event of Survivor Series, but I don't remember people saying that Survivor Series did all that great. And so every time we saw Ryback in a pay-per-view match, he lost. Here's a guy that did nothing but win, you know, I mean, the fucking DJ Khalid of WWE, and all of a sudden now he loses to CM Punk, and he loses again to Punk and John Cena, and then he loses to fucking, I don't know, Mark Henry, and he gets pinned, I think, in the, was Ryback the one to get pinned by the Shield in that six-man tag, I think, at the February pay-per-view? I mean, he lost, and he lost, and he lost, and he lost some more. Actually, I think it might have been John Cena who got pinned. But regardless, he had momentum. Could he have been the next Goldberg? Could he have been world champion and top merchandise seller and ratings mover? I don't know. I feel like in a lot of ways, Ryback, at that time, Ryback was a hell of a lot more one-dimensional than he is now. I'm actually pretty entertained when I see Ryback come out now because I get the impression he doesn't give a fuck. You know, he comes out, the big guy said this, the big guy, you know. I find him very entertaining. Back then, he was very one-dimensional. Can you have a guy like that on top? You know, I guess it worked for a time for WCW, but it's a, you know, that was 20 years ago. People have certain expectations, I think, now for a guy in that position. You got to be able to wrestle. You got to be able to talk. You've got to have all those different tools. But I think if they really wanted to get behind Ryback, if they believed in him that much, they would have made it work. All you got to do is, you know, let the guy go in there and kick ass. That's all you got to do. So from Ryback's perspective, I can see, you know, in his mind, hey, I had something over here, and you chose to go another way, and you ruined my career because of it. I had something, and you killed it. You put a pillow over its face, and you smothered it. That's not Ryback's fault. You know, wrong place, wrong time. But it's not his fault. But because of that, you know, that one decision may well have changed this whole guy's career. I mean, he's been there for a number of years. He's made good money. He's had start and stop pushes, right? They put the Intercontinental title on him. But, you know, but that's another issue. Ryback's not the only victim of that. You talk about start and stop pushes. Think of all the guys. Bray Wyatt. I mean, I can go up and down the list here. Bray Wyatt, Dolph Ziggler. All the guys they started to do something with. They started to push these guys. And then for whatever reason, they just went, you know, and they cut it off. So how many of those guys, had they kept going with them, might have also gotten to a position where they can make Dean Ambrose money and Seth Rollins money and Roman Reigns money and maybe not John Cena money, but make a hell of a lot more money than they were making in the role that they ended up being in. So I think he's right in that respect. The quote-unquote losers are punished for doing their jobs. They're not punished for something that they did. I don't think that everybody has equal value when it comes to the members of the roster. I mean, everybody plays an important role in that company. You could talk beyond even the wrestlers. Talk about the stage crew and the production people and, you know, fucking interns and everybody. Everybody plays an important role in that company. The makeup lady, right? But in terms of the roster talent, not everybody is of equal value. That's the system that WWE has created. Of course somebody like John Cena is going to mean more to the company than Ryback. But he is right in this notion that the losers are punished for doing their job. And you could look up and down the list of cuts I just spent 30 minutes going through, and you can see example after example after example of it, from Wade Barrett to Damian Sandow to Alex Riley. Now, Dave Meltzer chimed in. He says there was another issue involved in these conversations or negotiations. One potential sticking point, and Ryback didn't mention this in his blog, I don't think, but he claims that Ryback wants his hotels paid for on the road, which right now WWE does not cover that. The only thing WWE covers, I believe, is the airfare. When it comes to the rental cars and the hotels, that's the responsibility of the talent. That's why you have a lot of talent. They travel together. They carpool together. Some of them share rooms and stuff to try to save money because those expenses, they're responsible for. And I think this goes back to this whole sham of independent contractor versus employee. That's a whole other discussion. I've ranted on that enough before, and the whole sham they have going on there. I give them a lot of credit for getting away with it as long as they have. But that is something I think that WWE probably should be doing, because I don't think there's any other industry, any other form of entertainment even remotely like what WWE does, where the talent, the performers, would not have stuff like that paid for. And I can remember a story, you know, back when Stacy Keibler was first on Dancing with the Stars, right? She took time off from WWE. She went to go do Dancing with the Stars, which ended up making her a big star, and she never did go back. which is probably a big part of why WWE doesn't want its talent to, you know, doing stuff like that. And I think they, well, I remember reading Jericho's book. They pitched a fit when ABC wanted Jericho to host that game show, I think it was called Downfall, which he did anyway. But he fought with Vince McMahon tooth and nail over that because, you know, they don't want you to leave, and then you become a big star, and now you don't need them anymore. But I remember, I don't know if it was Meltzer or who, was telling the story when Stacey Keibler did Dancing with the Stars, and she was talking with some of the other people on the show about, like, what she does and what a day in the life is in WWE and all the travel and how they don't, you know, the company doesn't cover their travel expenses. And these people were blown away by this. They just didn't understand the concept of that. They're like, what do you mean they don't cover your hotel or your rental cars? How is that even possible? How is that legal? They couldn't believe it. They were stunned because that's generally not how it's done. So I think that's another issue that Ryback, you know, hey, I think he makes a very valid point. But we'll see how this situation is going to turn out. I mean, there's a whole trademark issue also that's brewing between them. Apparently Ryback filed a trademark application, I think late last year, for the big guy name. And then WWE, like 3 or 4 months later, filed their own. I think Ryback's application is a little further along, so he may end up getting the rights to that name, and then if he leaves, he can use the name The Big Guy. If he can't call himself Ryback, he can be The Big Guy on the Indies, or Japan, or wherever he wants to go. His contract, like I said earlier, I think it ends in August. I have a feeling this is it for Ryback in WWE. I just feel like he's got one foot out the door. I just don't see Vince acquiescing to all of these different demands or all of these different requests. I mean, Ryback is a star, but he's not that big of a star. I don't see Vince bending over backwards for him necessarily on this. And so if Ryback leaves, the question is, where does he go? What does he do? Where does he end up? You know, he could go to Japan. I think a New Japan might have an interest in him. Somebody emailed me, and I think they were half joking, or maybe all joking. They were like, you know, Ryback could go to Lucha Underground. You could put him in a mask, maybe, or not. But you can call him like Ryan Steele and make him a team with Cage. And so they could become the team Steel Cage, which I thought was very, it was clever. It was corny, but clever. But I do think that there's a place for him. There'll be a demand for him. You know, he's been on TV now for a long time. And you know, he's not bad. You know, Ryback, I don't know that Ryback does get enough credit for the things that he can do, you know, and he does work his ass off, and I hope he lands on his feet. Wherever he goes, I wish him nothing but success. I really do, because you could tell just even from his writing, here's a guy who's very passionate about what he does, and he's very frustrated. And if he leaves, I hope he finds satisfaction somewhere else, and he can throw it in WWE's face. Like a lot of guys that have left, who have had success in New Japan or Lucha Underground. I mean, maybe they're not making as much money as they were. Maybe they are. But a lot of those guys left, and guess what? They're better off for it. And I think Ryback will be too. Monday Night Raw this past week was live from St. Louis, Missouri. Raw Instapoll, 1,678 votes. 54% thumbs up, 46% thumbs down. Very much a split reaction. Hits and misses this week. Kevin Owens, as usual. One of the highlights of the show, he interrupted Shane McMahon yet again, and this is like the second or third time now that he's interrupted Shane, and they've jaw-jacked back and forth, and I have no idea if this is the direction they're going in or not, but I see these two guys in the ring together, and I would love to see a match between them. I don't know why. I really feel like the two of them would go in there and have like a street fight and would just tear the house down. So I'd love to see it. Tyler Breeze won an actual match. An actual exhibition inside a ring with a referee who counted three. This happened. He beat Goldust. The streak is over. He is now 53 or something for the year. It was not a distraction roll-up, but you know what? A win is a win. New Day and Colin Cassidy beat the Dudleys and the Vaudevillains. This is a fun match. Vaudevillains are, in fact, the number one contenders for the tag team titles by way of forfeit at Payback. So my assumption in the Payback review I did on YouTube was right. And it makes sense. I mean, when a guy gets hurt in a match, and if he can't continue, you don't throw the match away. You award the match to the other team. It's very simple. It's always been done that way. Otherwise, all you're doing, you're exposing how fake everything is because, well, this guy couldn't finish his planned performance, so we'll have to redo the match at some other time. It's stupid. It doesn't make any sense. Colin Cassidy was without Enzo, who was out with a concussion after that nasty bump he took at the pay-per-view. Although Enzo supposedly, he was home. Hey, Enzo, get better. He was backstage. They just didn't use him. If they think he's going to be out for a few weeks, it's better to keep him off TV and save his return. You never know, though, with concussions. I mean, that's the whole thing. And I keep reading this was a serious concussion. He had a bad one, and that worries me. Chris Nowinski suffered a bad one, and he never wrestled again. Bret Hart suffered a bad one, and actually he suffered a few more because he didn't realize he had suffered one. It went undiagnosed, so he kept wrestling. It sounds like Enzo, what happened is, and this makes it even worse, I think he took a boot or a double boot from Aiden English in the corner right before that spot where Gotch threw him into the ropes. I think that's where he got knocked loopy. So he may have suffered a concussion or the concussion may have been suffered on that even before he hit the ropes a few seconds later. So I don't know if he suffered two concussions or just one that maybe was made even worse by the second bump or what happened here, but he took a beating in that match, and these things are very unpredictable. Dolph Ziggler, when he was the world champion, suffered a concussion. He got kicked in the head by Jack Swagger, and you thought, all right, he'll be out for a few weeks, and he ended up being out a lot longer than that, and his whole world title run got cut short, which maybe it would have been anyway, who knows? But he missed most of it because he was sitting on the sidelines because he kept having headaches. Daniel Bryan, we know his issues, although he's had a series of concussions and had seizures from them many years ago. It's a scary thing. It really is. I mean, people are like, oh, when's Enzo going to, is Enzo going to be back for the next pay-per-view? Let's just make sure Enzo can come back, period. How about that? I'm not convinced Enzo's coming back so fast. Cassidy got the pin on D-Von with the East River Crossing. I thought Colin Cassidy held his own just fine on the mic when he came out. He's not this natural charismatic talker that Enzo Amore is, but if he had to run on his own, I think he would do okay for himself. I mean, he held his own. Look, Enzo broke his leg in NXT. He was out for 6 months, and he was not out there with Big Cass because he had a fucking broken leg, of course. So he had to go out there by himself. And as time went on, he seemed to get more and more comfortable. Ironically, I can remember one of the people he was feuding with was Aiden English. And Aiden English would come out and do this gimmick where he would sing. This was before the vaudevillains became a thing. I'll tell you something. Colin has a hell of a voice himself. He'd get on the mic. He'd start singing like soprano. And it cut over pretty well at Full Sail. So I think he, on his own, he would do okay. He's obviously better as part of a package with Enzo. They make a great team. But if he had to run on his own, he's got that size. I'm sure he's going to get opportunities down the road to be something as a single. I think he'll do okay for himself. Stephanie McMahon was the guest on the Ambrose Asylum. Ambrose tried to get her all riled up the entire time until she finally announced that she was canceling the Ambrose Asylum and replacing it with the Highlight Reel. Jericho came out, two of them brawled. Ended with Jericho shattering Dean's potted plant Mitch over his head. He had a potted plant named Mitch. TNA has its own potted plant named Dixie. Rusev won a battle royal to determine a new number one contender for the United States Championship. Sin Cara was among the participants. His partner Kalisto is, of course, the reigning United States champion. He did commentary for the match, and he offered up this gem. At one point about Sin Cara, he said, "Me and my partner are teammates." He sure is. Kalisto does a lot of things well. Commentary is not one of those things. Came down to Sheamus, Del Rio, Rusev, and Zack Ryder, former League of Nations members, all worked together for about a minute. And then turned on each other. Came down to Ryder and Rusev. Rusev won. If you haven't seen the interview that Rusev and Lana did with Michael Cole on YouTube, you got to go watch it because it's awesome. He talks about eating Kalisto's heart and teases that he and Lana have multiple cameras in their house, presumably that film them having lots of wild animal sex. And he winks when he says it. Rusev is a god among men. He is the one and only lone saving grace of the League of Nations. I actually very much enjoy Rusev. Somebody had posted a thread on our Facebook group a while back. I think the headline was like, why does everyone hate Rusev? And I didn't read all the comments, but the first thought I had was, who the hell hates Rusev? is there really a lot of Rusev hate? I don't get the sense that there's a lot of hate for Rusev. Quite the opposite. I mean, there's a lot of hate for Sheamus. There's a lot of hate for a lot of things in WWE. I don't get the sense that Rusev is one of those things. Rusev is great. Titus O'Neil was back also in that Battle Royal. He was, he didn't win, but he was in there. And speaking of Titus, it appears that the primetime players are no more. On SmackDown, they aired a vignette with Darren Young asking Bob Backlund to be his life coach. And Backlund said the first lesson as his life coach is that wrestling is life. And I didn't say that nearly as psychotically as Bob Backlund did. Bob Backlund was his usual self in this video. But he said, you know, wrestling is life. That's your first lesson. And the tagline of these videos, the graphic they put up at the end to play off all the Donald Trump nonsense, is we're going to make Darren Young great again. And my first thought was, that would imply that Darren Young was great at some other point. I must have missed that. But nonetheless, let's just not get too carried away here. I love this. I thought this was great. I think this has the potential to be very entertaining. Backlund is just an absolute madman. Darren Young, they're not doing anything with him at the moment. It gives him something to do, gives him TV time. You know, Titus O'Neil already had his chance to get over as a singles guy, and I don't know if he's ever going to have that chance again. Darren Young really has not had that chance. And so let's see what they can do with him. You know, let's see how far they could take this. And you know what's really cool about this is this entire thing was Darren Young's idea. He pitched this exact idea on an episode of Chris Jericho's podcast last September. So it took a while, but they finally decided to give him a chance to go ahead and run with it. So this is not some wacky creative idea that they came up with for him. This is all him. We have Roman Reigns and the Usos against AJ Styles, Luke Gallows, and Karl Anderson in the main event. Styles won with the phenomenal forearm. After the match, Gallows and Anderson, they wanted AJ to hit Roman with a chair, but Styles wouldn't do it. Threw the chair down. Actually got booed for throwing the chair down. That'd be like the crowd booing Roddy Piper for throwing the ring bell down at WrestleMania 8. Actually, he might have gotten some boos. I don't remember him being booed. I know Bobby Heenan was booing him on commentary. Yeah, Bobby Heenan said that night, what the hell, ring the bell. But Piper didn't do it, and see, he paid the price for it. See what happens when you're nice in life? That's a good life lesson for all you kids out there. Nice guys finish last. You remember that. It's a lesson from the Sala Monster. The Usos picked up that chair. See, here's another example. He wouldn't hit him with it. He put the chair down, right? Usos picked up the chair. They hit him with it. They hit him with the chair. So then AJ got all pissed off. He picked up the chair, hit them with it. And then Roman Reigns saw him hitting his cousins with the chair. See, this whole thing could have been avoided if AJ Styles would have just whacked him in the fucking head with that chair. But he didn't do it, and so he paid the price for it. Roman got all pissed off. He beat the hell out of AJ Styles. He powerbombed him through the table outside the ring, left him laying. This was Reigns the ass kicker. Ass kicking Roman Reigns is the best Roman Reigns. Smug Roman Reigns, I would put in second place. But I really dug the storytelling here. I like the AJ Roman stuff that they've been doing. AJ, you know, here, he does the right thing. He refuses to hit Roman with the chair. Reigns only sees him attacking his cousins with it, and then he snaps. And, you know, I like it. I like the story that they're telling here. I thought this was really good. What I didn't like was on SmackDown, they had the exact same match again, and Reigns pinned Karl Anderson. I guess if you're going to get beat, may as well be by the WWE champion. There's no shame in that, but they didn't have to beat Gallows and Anderson yet. They chose to do that, and I didn't like that.
He drives one! Deep left field! Back goes Upton! Back near the wall! It's out of here! Bartolo has done it! The impossible has happened! This is one of the great moments in the history of baseball.
How great was that? Gary Cohen, one of the best calls I've ever heard there. I just wanted an excuse to play the audio, so I figured, what the hell, instead of the usual NXT music, I'll just play that. Fucking Bartolo Colon, who had never hit a home run his entire career. This guy's going to be 43 years old. And he's a pitcher, too, so you don't expect him to hit very many home runs anyway. He never hit one until yesterday. I think it was a two-run shot, too, no less. Knocked it out of the park. It's just something you don't expect to see. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, now you expect pigs to go flying, like, overhead, and TNA to start making money, you know, that kind of thing. So, anyways, a Mets fan. It was a great moment. Bartolo Colon has played for a lot of teams in his career, not just the Mets. He's been all over the place. Big Bart. He's fucking awesome. He is. He's my favorite player on the entire team. Him. Syndergaard is number two. I have to put Bartolo at number one. All right, enough of the baseball stuff. Let's get to NXT. We got a lot of UK fans going, what is this baseball you're talking of? You're talking about? Actually, the just to go back on that, there was I know there was a big upset recently. Leicester, was it Leicester? Leicester City or something won, and somebody's like, what do you think of Leicester City winning? Leicester? Maybe it's Leicester. And I said, I don't know. I don't watch badminton, so I can't really share my thoughts on that. You want to get under a European skin, you got to say something like that. It's the easiest way to do it. Anyway, Samoa Joe and Eric Young. I want to talk about this. Samoa Joe came out at the beginning of NXT this week, and he basically threw down the gauntlet. He's like, you know, if anybody can stop me, and out comes Eric Young from TNA, the Eric Young. He got a holy shit chant, and they acknowledged their history together. They did acknowledge the fact that they knew one another from the past. EY looked at the NXT title. He says, I collect those. I collect championships. Yes, including the Knockouts tag team titles. Let's not forget that. So anyway, this led to a match later in the show. Get to that in a second. My thoughts on Eric Young, I already gave it last week. Yeah, I'm happy for the guy. I think he'll find his role in WWE. He's really not the one I'm excited about. I'm waiting for Bobby Roode. And I don't think I'm going to have to wait much longer. Nia Jax squashed Tessa Blanchard in a short match. Austin Aries and Ty Dillinger. They had a fun match. Ty Dillinger was more popular than Austin Aries was. People doing 10 chants. He didn't win, of course. He hardly ever wins. In fact, one of the only times I can remember Ty Dillinger winning a match, he beat Alex Riley. Oh, poor guy. Aries won with the 450, then backstage later on during the interview he did with Kathy Kelly, who's their new interviewer. He said something seems a bit off lately, like, you know, Austin Aries is just not making a big enough impact on this show, which is very true. He feels almost like an afterthought, but I mean, coming in around the same time as Nakamura will have that kind of effect on someone. Bobby Roode, by the way, I should have mentioned this before when I mentioned Roode. Roode is signed. He is signed, sealed, and delivered. He's on his way in. That's going to make the fourth former TNA world champion on the NXT roster. And WWE's UK Twitter account accidentally spilled the beans on Bobby Roode being part of their UK tour next month. And then they quickly deleted the tweet. I mention this because I'm hoping that this new change that Austin Aries seemed to be teasing here in his promo might just be him aligning with Bobby Roode when he comes in, and maybe they can become a tag team again. I mean, just the idea, you know, Jordan and Gable feuding with Aries and Roode for the tag team titles. Sign me up. I always thought Aries was better as a heel anyway. I mean, even Aries and Roode against the Revival or something. I mean, that's another hell of a match. And speaking of the Revival, they beat the Hype Bros with the Shatter Machine. Not nearly as good as their squash against the 3.0 from Chikara last week. I find it hard to give a shit about the Hype Bros. And it's really nothing against Zach. I find it hard to give a shit about anything that Mojo Rawley does. And even Mojo personally, on a personal level, it's nothing against the guy. He was nice to us when we met him in one of the bars on Bourbon Street, you know, Mania weekend a couple of years back. He was living the gimmick on that night, or maybe it isn't a gimmick. Maybe that's just how he really is. He's all wound up all the time. But I find it hard to care. And it's been a while now, so I feel like something's got to change. It's one thing for him to come out here and he's the hyped guy, right? And he runs around like a maniac, but there's got to be more. I was just talking about Ryback earlier and how one-dimensional he was when he first came on the scene in WWE, and I think Mojo suffers from the same thing. It's just very one-dimensional, and we don't really hear from him, right? We don't hear him speak that much. There's got to be some kind of a change, I think, at some point, whether that's him turning on Zach and you know, maybe trying to be the bad guy and play that role. I don't know. I just feel like something's got to change for me to really care. Then we had Alex Riley. Alex Riley was interviewed backstage about his match next week with Shinsuke Nakamura. And Riley mocked Nakamura's size, says he has no athletic ability. I don't even know what strong style is. That's what Alex Riley said. So next week he says it's time to rage. Actually, he didn't even say it that way. He's just like, next week, it's time to rage. It's very low key. Like, he didn't really believe that he was going to be raging much next week. But that's what he said. So I was going to say something funny here, but I don't want to kick a man while he's down. I think Nakamura will do plenty of that next week. No Way Jose made his Full Sail debut against a new face we've not seen before on NXT, Noah. No, not Noah Mark. This would be Noah Kakoa. Came out of Off of the Wild Samoans promotion. He signed a developmental deal 2 years ago. It's the first I've seen of him. I thought he was fine. This wasn't really a showcase for him. It was a showcase for No Way Jose. No Way Jose won with a full Nelson Slam. Actually, Noah was... he was in a match on Friday night. There was an NXT house show in... I want to say it was Citrus Springs, Florida. Somewhere in Florida. And it was against a guy named Kenneth Crawford. I just got done reading about that this morning. He's another new guy they signed. Young guy. Crawford got hurt real bad. He tried some kind of springboard move in the match, and I think he slipped and fell, and he hit the mat real hard, and Noah had to pin him quickly, and he stayed down for a long time. He wasn't moving his arms and his legs. He got stretchered out. I haven't heard any updates on the guy since then, so I hope he's okay. Finn Balor, we got a vignette here. He's back next week. Main event was Samoa Joe against Eric Young in a non-title match. First night in, and he's already wrestling the champ. He did not have a signed contract with the WWE when this happened, but he will very shortly if he doesn't already, so EY is pretty much in. He looked good here. They had a good match, nothing terribly exciting, but by the end, Joe by the end looked like an absolute crazed monster. He is, I gotta say this, Samoa Joe is the best champion by far, it's not even close, of any champion in all of WWE right now. That includes the main roster, that includes NXT. Just in terms of badassery, if that's a word, and believability, you know, and then you throw in his work on top of that, in case you didn't hear, he's pretty good. He's the man. Asuka, I'd put Asuka right behind him at number two. So he hit EY with a muscle buster, knocked him loopy with it, and then locked him in the Coquina clutch with a tap out, so Joe wins. So I thought that was, you know, it was a fine episode of NXT. Nothing overly exciting, but, you know, they furthered Samoa Joe as being the badass champ. They introduced some new faces. It's really all you can ask for. Before we move on here, I want to do a bit of promotion. We are now running a promotion with Podbean. We have our own affiliate link. Get a lot of questions from people asking me, you know, how do I start my own podcast? What do I do? What equipment do I need? And what service should I use? Well, you know, I tell everybody, if you're going to just start at the beginning, you know, you do a couple of things. You invest in a decent quality USB microphone. You can use some free audio editor like Audacity. And, you know, maybe you want to use YouTube. YouTube, you know, your show will be very searchable. Yeah, I try to help in whatever way that I can. But I've used the Podbean service now for a long time, as many of you have known, and there have been some issues over the years. Right now, things are copacetic, everything's okay, and I'm very happy with it. Podbean is probably one of the biggest services out there when it comes to podcast hosting. And, you know, it's fairly reasonable, especially if you're a new podcaster, you're just starting out, you know, you're going to pay kind of on the beginner level. You really can't go wrong with Podbean. They have a quality service. I use it. I've been using it now for years. If it's good enough for the Sound Off, it's good enough for you. You can use our link and get your first month of hosting on Podbean now free. So if you're thinking about it, if I'm catching you at the right time, use the link. You can sign up for a Podbean account. Whether I don't know whether you want to pay monthly or annually. You have the option of doing either or. But you get your first month free if you use our link. And our link is Podbean. Actually, you got to put the www in there or else it won't work. www.podbean.com/r/Solomonster. That's our link, www.podbean.com/r/Solomonster. Punch that in. You can sign up. Like I said, you get your first month free. And Podbean is one of the best services out there, so take advantage of that while you can. All right, let's move on here. Lucha Underground. Great news. Season 3 of Lucha Underground, which is either done filming or is almost done, has apparently been extended. This is according to Lucha Blog. I believe it was supposed to run about 26 episodes the next season, and now it's been extended to 40. Katrina did an interview recently. I got to get her on this show. I've got to get Katrina on here. She also said that the third season had been extended by about 14 episodes or so. And last I checked, 26 plus 14 equaled 40. So 40 is better than 26, I will say that. More Lucha. It's never a bad thing. Angelico suffered an elbow injury a couple weeks ago while filming for season 3. The update on him is that it's going to be about 2 months before he's able to come back. He suffered a dislocated elbow and a fractured radius cup. I don't even know what that is, but it sounds painful if you break it. So thankfully, he won't be gone for too long. One more thing here before I move on to the show this past week, and I got a lot to say about that, especially the main event. I mentioned the actor Branscombe Richmond last week when I was doing the Renegade stuff. Remember, I was talking about Lorenzo Lamas, who made a cameo in Lucha Underground a few weeks ago, and apparently he's going to be making more. Him and Branscombe, they were both on the TV show Renegade, and I was wondering, whatever happened to that guy? I don't remember seeing him in anything since then. And then, thanks to many of you, I realized, hey, dummy, he was in The Scorpion King with The Rock. He played The Rock's brother. I had completely forgotten about that. I probably haven't seen The Scorpion King since it came out in like 2002, 2003. But even better than that, so I tell this story last week about how I used to watch Renegade and I played the intro music and I talked about this Branscombe Richmond, right? So I get an email from one of our listeners, Walter. He emailed me to tell me that he just wrapped filming a movie with the guy. It's called Inquisitor. Still in the pre-production stages. Should be coming out sometime later this year. He even filmed a scene with the guy. Said he was a really cool dude. He's in the movie with him. What are the chances? So I thought that was a fun little thing to mention. Let's talk about the show from this past Wednesday. Dario Cueto and Katrina had a meeting in his office to open the show. Mil Muertes will get his rematch with Matanza next week for the Lucha Underground Championship. And to show that Mil does not intimidate Matanza or himself, Dario says that it's going to be Mil's specialty, a Grave Consequences match. Grave Consequences was one of my favorite matches last year. You guys know that. So I have high hopes for this. And this time, he says it will be Graver Consequences because, unlike last time where they had one casket you had to roll your opponent into, this time there's going to be four. There'll be one casket, I guess, on each side of the ring. If you are new to Lucha Underground, by the way, and I know a lot of you are, I get people all the time, where should I start? Where should I begin? I say start from the beginning. But if you are looking for like one really great match as a starting point, then I can't point you to anything else other than the Grave Consequences match from season 1 between Mil Muertes and Phoenix. Do yourself a favor, find that match. They may have the full match actually uploaded on the El Rey Network YouTube channel. They do upload a lot of the big matches on there in full. So absolutely check that out. You'll see why I like it so much. I mean, it's violent. Violent as all hell. And I think without the context of knowing why Mil hates Phoenix's fucking guts so much, I mean, it was a grudge match. So if you go into a cold, you're not going to have the backstory about why they hate each other. But even without the context, it's a great fucking match. So that would be my suggested starting point, if not the beginning of season 1. Marty the Moth against the Mac. Marty in that gear is just... ugh. Thankfully, it was short. Mac won with Mark Mero's old TKO move. He gets one of the ancient Aztec medallions. In fact, every match on this show was for a medallion. Dario Cueto then spoke with Sexy Star in his office. He could tell something bad must have happened to her, he says, while she was held captive by Marty and Mariposa. He told the story of how abusive his own mother was to him and Matanza when they were kids, and he goes, my mother was, how shall I put this, an evil bitch. That's just like, And here, no less, you know, here we are on Mother's Day. As I record this, his mother said it was an evil bitch. So he says one day, they reached a point where they said no more to all of her abuse. And he said, Sexy Star must do the same with Mariposa. And so he made a no mas match as the main event, where the only way to win is to get your opponent to scream, no mas. I love this segment. I just, Dario Cueto is just the fucking best, man. I can't say enough good things about this guy in this role. And even just this segment, the way it was shot and everything else, and him telling the story, and the story of Sexy Star and everything she's been through, how they tied those two things together. I love this. This was great. We had El Siniestro de la Muerte with Katrina versus King Cuerno. Cuerno got about 2 minutes of offense here before being whacked in the head by Katrina with her giant rock. And in a huge upset, I call it a huge upset, Siniestro pinned King Cuerno to win one of the ancient Aztec medallions. This poor King Cuerno. He wanted out of his Lucha Underground contract so he can go to WWE. And I think WWE wanted him for this Cruiserweight Classic that they're doing. That's what it is now, by the way. It's no longer the Global Cruiserweight Series. It's now the Cruiserweight Classic. But anyway, he wanted out of his contract so he can go work for them, and they wanted him. And Lucha Underground would not let him go. And now here he is, losing to Skeletor. Chavo Guerrero goes to Dario Cueto's office. Chavo, another one of my favorites. He wants to know why he doesn't have a match for one of the medallions. It's because you suck, and you don't deserve one. It's basically what Dario said. I'm only paraphrasing what Dario said. Don't blame me. Actually, he said, you're not worth it, which is his own way of saying, you suck, pal. And he mentions how, you know, Chavo's already lost in 2 Aztec Warfare matches. So Chavo threatens to take matters into his own hands, and he walks out, and Dario just rolls his eyes. That's what I do every time I see Chavo on my TV screen. We had Mascarita Sagrada. He was in the middle of another little workout when Famous B interrupted and said, let's go, I've got you a big match, and it's for one of the Aztec medallions. Unfortunately, he didn't tell him that it was against Cage. If he can beat Cage, he gets Cage's medallion. As Cage walks down to the ring, we see the little guy in the ring praying and then doing some push-ups. Maybe not the best strategy to use going into a match with Cage, praying and push-ups. But anyway, Cage having to sell even just a little bit for this guy, as talented as he is. You make this match and Cage has to sell for him. It's just fucking ridiculous. I'm sorry. But, you know, at least it was over quickly. He gave him a giant F5 and pinned him. And then Chavo came out and stole Cage's medallion. Why would you steal from someone like Cage? I can only explain this by assuming that Chavo's taken one too many unprotected chair shots to the head during his career. Sexy Star and Mariposa in a no mas match. I had my own no mas match the other night. I got one of those burrito bowls from Chipotle, which I used to affectionately refer to as Chipotle before somebody corrected me. And I know it's easy to pick on Chipotle these days. I don't eat there very often. There's one that's not too far from where I work, but I had one of those chicken bowls, and I don't know what happened. I just don't know, but I was saying no mas that night. I can tell you that. 2 hours later, I couldn't even feel my legs. Anyway, this was a fucking incredible match. The wrestling itself, whatever, you know, nothing really all that great. Mariposa really hasn't impressed me, in all honesty, from, you know, the minute she came in. Sexy Star, I'm not a fan when they do the intergender stuff. But what made this so great, I mean, yeah, the blood and the cursing was part of it because it felt like a real fight. But it was the story that it told. This storyline dates back to the end of last season when they kidnapped Sexy Star, right? Marty the Moth and Mariposa. Mariposa hadn't even debuted yet. Marty was only teasing that his sister was coming in. They kidnapped this poor woman. They scarred this woman for life. Whatever it is that she and her brother did to her. And she's been terrified of even being around Mariposa all of this season. She cowers in fear at the sight of Mariposa. And then you have the segment earlier in the show with Dario Cueto relaying his own story to her and telling her, you know, if you want this thing to end tonight, you have to make her scream, no mas. And then even when she does, you can't let go, right? You've got to continue. You can't stop. You need to hold on, and you got to put the fear of God into this woman. And that's what she did. This was Sexy Star's revenge, and this was them putting her over in the main event of the show as one of the biggest baby faces and one of the biggest badasses in all of Lucha Underground. Not just among the women, but among everybody on the show, male or female, or midget. And they succeeded in doing that. They brawled all over the temple, up into the balcony, even higher up into the rafters, onto the scaffold. They teased Mariposa throwing Sexy Star off of it. Vampiro could only tell us about the scaffold match he had with Sting in WCW and how terrified he was to even be up there. Although I didn't need Vampiro on commentary to tell me how scary it is. I was having vertigo and having all these feelings just watching this on TV. Actually watching it on my freaking iPhone screen. Remember, it's 4 inches and it gets the job done. Somewhere in here, Sexy Star starts bleeding all over the place. I don't even know how it happened. I don't know if she bladed. I don't know if it was stage blood. Either way, in the moment, it felt real, and that's all that matters. So who cares whether it was real or not? It looked real enough. She was bleeding. Her mask was partially torn. She looked half dead out there. Marty the Moth interfered at some point. The Mac took him out. Back in the ring, Mariposa gets Sexy in something that resembled Paige's PTO move, only without pulling her up for it. The referee drops down, and he asks Sexy something in Spanish. I guess, you know, what do you say? To which she responds, completely uncensored, mind you, "Fuck you! Fuck you, Mariposa! Fuck you!" Fans went wild. Vampiro on commentary popped huge, and so did I. It was an awesome moment. It really was. And it's actually refreshing after listening to all that WWE dialogue for so long, being brainwashed by all this ridiculously inhuman dialogue they have people reciting over and over and over again, to hear something a little more realistic, right? That's the advantage. I guess that's the advantage of being on a network that, you know, gets you whatever it is, 130,000 viewers every week instead of one that gets you 3 million like Raw. But it was still refreshing to hear. You know, she fought back, kicked Mariposa right in the vagina, and then locked in a choke, but Marty interfered again. The Mac ran back in, laid him out with a stunner, and Sexy got Mariposa in an armbar, clamped down until she screamed, "No mas! No mas!" And Sexy held on to the hold for a long time. She shoved the referee down, put Mariposa back into the armbar for a second time. Finally, she threw her out of the ring. She wins one of the ancient Aztec medallions. She hugs the Mac to end the show. He looked thrilled to get all that blood on him. This was a great match. This was just the story it told, the brutality, Sexy taking Dario's advice, right? Tying those two things together post-match, just putting her back in the armbar again, making Mariposa pay for what she did to her, and setting Sexy up, obviously, for something bigger down the road. I just thought this was great, great stuff. And I know for some people, maybe it was too violent. Some people thought, well, it wasn't really a great match, and she just cursed. It wasn't just the cursing. It's everything put together. And this story, I mean, who knows? Maybe they'll have a rematch or something. That sounds like something WWE would do. To me, this was a blow-off. This is the end of the feud. You know, the hero, the heroine won in the end. And now we move on to other things. So I thought this was just fantastic. The mailbag. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Amir starts us off. What do you make of Vince Russo's comments on his recent podcast that Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens are not good workers? So I heard what he said. I listened to the clip. He went off on how Zayn and Owens are not great workers. They're great tumblers. Because you can't believably take a beating and then go on offense 5 seconds later. That's his argument. The man is entitled to his opinion. He's expressing an opinion. But if that's how he honestly feels, then I guess those Attitude Era guys that he wrote for were all tumblers too. Steve Austin was a tumbler. The Rock was a tumbler. Triple H was a tumbler. Because guys have been getting beaten down and no-selling moves in their matches for years. This is not a new phenomenon. I mean, we're seeing more of it, but this is nothing new. They still do it to this day. Seth Rollins gave John Cena a giant frog splash on Raw. And 2 seconds later, Cena reverses it into an attitude adjustment and pins him. Now, on Twitter, Russo said that great wrestlers sell and great tumblers don't. Right? So I would pose this question then to him. Does he think John Cena isn't a great wrestler? And I realize, you know, using him as an example here may not be the best thing for me to be doing, like with this audience, but the reality is, John Cena is a great wrestler, okay? You can't throw a decent-looking punch to save his life. I'm not saying I could either, but I'm not the one throwing him on TV every week. You know, even Bret Hart's like, what the fuck, when he watches John Cena throw a punch. But Cena really doesn't get enough credit for being great, you know? At least when it comes to, like, big matches, he's had far too many great matches in his career not to give him credit for that. We've seen Cena sell a gazillion times, right, before making the big Superman comeback, but guess what? He tumbles too, just like everybody else does, lots of times. So does Sami Zayn. But I've also seen plenty of Sami Zayn matches from NXT, and I'm assuming Russo doesn't watch NXT, but I've seen plenty of Sami Zayn matches from NXT alone where he sells and sells and sells and sells and sells, and then makes the big heroic underdog comeback. The guy can tell a great story in the ring. So let's not pretend that this is just an indie problem or, you know, it's a Sami Zayn problem or a Kevin Owens problem. This happens all the time. Cena is guilty of it. Roman Reigns is guilty of it. ROH guys are guilty of it. New Japan guys are guilty of it. You can't just pin this on indie talent. I mean, his argument seems to be rooted in the art of selling, right? Psychology, believability. He used Bret Hart as an example. You know what? On that, we can agree. Nobody told a better story in his matches or made his matches more believable than Bret Hart did. I've talked about it lots of times before on this podcast, okay? It's why Bret's one of my favorite. Actually, he's not one of my favorites. If I had to pick one, Bret is my favorite of all time. Remember the example I gave, the fingers in the King of the Ring in 93, okay? So I get it. I get the point that he's kind of sort of trying to make here. He makes a valid point on that. I'll give it to him. But to single those two guys out when this is hardly a new problem in wrestling. I mean, come on. You know, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I mean, if Russo was writing their stuff, it'd be the taxi cab driver against the son of Adonis, bro. And it might have been on the same show. I didn't listen to the whole podcast, but apparently Russo also claimed that he would beat Tyler Breeze in a fight. I know Russo is a former WCW champion and all. I understand that, but you know what? I've got my money on Tyler Breeze here. Someone tweeted that to Breeze, like, what do you think about Vince Russo saying he can beat you in a fight? And Tyler's response was, well, he could try. And you know what? I'd like to see it. He would put Russo down in 5 seconds with a front face lock the way that Chris Jericho did to Goldberg. Okay, he would take what Lance Storm taught him, and he would put Russo down with a front face lock in 5 seconds. I don't know why Russo hates Tyler Breeze so much. I mean, the guy basically carries a pole around to the ring with him, right? That's all a selfie stick really is. It's a fucking pole that you carry sideways. It's a horizontal pole. I figured he'd be in love with the guy. Tay from DC, I heard a story a while back that might explain why Goldberg lost at the Elimination Chamber match in 2003. As the story goes, around the time that Triple H was injured, the plan was to have Goldberg win the title, but Vince McMahon wanted him to commit to a tour of Australia that they were doing right after the pay-per-view, and Goldberg said no. Can you speak on this and tell me if this story is true? First of all, it was SummerSlam, where they did the Chamber match that year, and this is the first I've ever heard of this story. I don't even think they did a tour of Australia after the pay-per-view. And they put the... I mean, look, they put the belt on Goldberg a month later anyway, so it doesn't make any sense. I'm calling bullshit on that story. What a mistake that was, by the way. He wins the Chamber and then wins the rematch also. That's how you do it. Goldberg was tearing through everybody in that chamber, and then boop, sledgehammer shot to the head and pinned. What, we got his big win next month though, and a long, boring match with Triple H. Sure put him over. It's unbelievable. Triple H couldn't even do a match at that point anyway. This was when he was hurt. He had like a torn groin or a pulled groin or something like that. This was the biker shorts phase that Triple H went through when he had the injury. It was like tights over biker shorts. He looked ridiculous. Sean from Sligo, Ireland. Do you think AJ Styles' phenomenal forearm is a credible finisher for someone with such a wide variety of finishers like AJ Styles has? He can use the springboard 450 splash, the spiral tap, which I have not seen him use yet, the calf crusher, and the Styles clash. Watching his matches in TNA, New Japan, or Ring of Honor, the forearm has barely, if ever, won him a match outside of WWE. What do you think of it as a finisher? I love it. I think it's fine. I think they love the visual of him coming off those ropes with it. He looks like a superhero, right? He looks like a comic book character as he's coming off the ropes like that. It's just this great visual thing, and I think that's why they love it so much. And they probably didn't want him using the Styles Clash as much because there's this danger for people who don't know how to take it the right way. And they're like, hey, why don't we use the forearm, right? Think about the forearm also is you can hit it on anybody at any time. So it doesn't matter how big or small they are, you can hit that forearm and knock them down. So that's another benefit to the move. He doesn't have to pick somebody up, which he wouldn't be able to do. I don't think we're going to be seeing AJ Styles giving Kane or Big Show the fucking Styles Clash. So it's just a lot of, it's like a super kick. A super kick you can hit out of nowhere. You can hit a super kick out of nowhere, you can hit an RKO out of nowhere, and it doesn't matter how big or small you are. Those are the moves that people get behind. So I think it's very easy for him to use it and easy for him to get a big pop when he nails it. The only thing about the move that I'm not a fan of is the name. I think Phenomenal Forearm sounds kind of corny. And maybe this is too, but I think, you know, he has the Styles Clash, right? He's got the Calf Crusher. I thought they would go with something like the Styles Smash. Kind of keep with that whole theme. I think that'd be a much better name, but whatever, they wanted the word phenomenal in there. It's just, it's a name. It's not a big deal. I like it. I really do. I await the day that he goes for the forearm, by the way, and Randy Orton turns it into an RKO. Because you know it's coming at some point. Luke from Arizona. Back in September of 2000, Kurt Angle wrestled a match outside of WWE with Christopher Daniels at a UPW show. What confuses me is the fact that they allowed Angle to wrestle outside of WWE. Why did they do this if their policy is that once you sign, you can only wrestle on WWE shows? Well, that wasn't always their policy. Things like that used to happen all the time. I mean, they sent guys to Memphis in the early 90s. They sent Brett, they sent Owen, Giant Gonzalez, and this was like a favor to Jerry Lawler. Jerry Lawler was the big star, obviously, in the Memphis promotion at the time. Vince McMahon himself worked heel in Memphis. So for all the people who think, oh, Mr. McMahon in the late 90s was the first like genesis of this McMahon heel character, he was playing this thing in Memphis in like 1993. You know, he didn't wrestle, but I know he taped some promos to send in. I mean, you'll find them. You look on YouTube, they're floating around. They're actually really good. I mean, he's wearing the old Vince McMahon WWF logo jacket with the, you know, the three-piece suit and everything, but it's evil Vince. I mean, there's no doubt about that. He would cut these promos and send in the tapes, and I think he did come down for a match once. I think it was him and Pat Patterson. They were at ringside for one of Lawler's matches. It was like a Lawler-McMahon feud. Lawler was the babyface, McMahon was the heel. It was the exact opposite of the dynamic they had on commentary if you used to watch WWF back in the day. And Vince looked like he was having fucking fun. I mean, I'm sure he was, because he was able to kind of play this other character. So he had some experience going down the heel road many years before he actually went down the heel road. But, you know, John Cena came out of UPW. Samoa Joe came out of UPW. There were a lot of guys that came out of there, and I think WWF always had their eye on them. And, you know, they just, you know, whether it was a favor to the promoter, I think it was Rick Bassman or whatever it was, they kind of had an unofficial relationship of sorts back then with WWE. It's nothing formal.
So it may have just been as a favor to them for whatever reason. Joey in Canada, what do you think would have happened with Stone Cold Steve Austin in the months following his WWE departure in mid-2002 had he not left? It's intriguing to think about the possibilities at the time. WWE was in a period of transition. When you consider the awesome SummerSlam card that year, it makes me wonder where Austin would have fit into that. I know there were plans for him to feud with Eddie Guerrero at the time he left and possibly Brock Lesnar. What do you think he would have been doing throughout the second half of 2002? I don't think they would have feuded him with Brock Lesnar in 2002. I think had he stuck around and stayed healthy, that could have been a WrestleMania match. I mean, maybe they would have kept the belt on Brock instead of turning him the way they did. And maybe Austin would have beaten Brock for the belt or something in 03. I don't know, but I think they would have saved an actual feud, like a program, for the following year. Because I don't think it would have made sense to use Austin that early in the game just as like a stepping stone. I mean, they did with The Undertaker. But I don't think they would have done that with Austin. I think it was too soon for that. I think they wanted Lesnar to beat him in that King of the Ring qualifier. That was the whole reason that Austin walked out in the first place, or one of the reasons. It was a stupid idea. And I agree with Austin on that. I mean, whether you agree that it was, you know, mature of him to walk out the way he did, it was a fucking stupid idea to put him in a match. The first ever Steve Austin Brock Lesnar match unannounced on Raw, and it's a King of the Ring qualifier. You know, it had to be Vince's way of like getting back at Austin for something. Austin was very vocal at the time. He was not a fan of the creative direction in the company. It had to be Vince's way of like trying to stick it to Austin, and he didn't bank on the fact that Austin would walk out the way he did. I think that's probably what happened there. Because it's just so stupid, and I know Vince has come up with some stupid ideas before, but that one's like, business-wise, was very, very dumb. And I could see why Austin wouldn't want to do it. He was supposed to have a match at the King of the Ring had he not walked out with Eddie Guerrero. They did announce that match. They set that up. He walked out. They replaced Austin with Ric Flair instead. Flair had lost control of Raw in a match to Vince that they had to quickly put together because Flair had been heel. He was like the heel co-owner of Raw. So when Austin left, they had a scramble and they just put together this Vince versus Ric Flair match on Raw for control of Raw, and Flair loses, and now he's just a guy. He's back to being a babyface now. I mean, Austin really fucked up all their plans. Honestly, I think that had Austin not left, he would have squashed Eddie at the King of the Ring. I mean, let's remember, this was long before Eddie Guerrero really took off as a top-level guy. And I don't mean squash like Eddie has no offense and it's over in 90 seconds, but I think it would have been a relatively short match. Austin would have gotten 85% of the offense and he would have beaten him because Eddie Guerrero was not a main event guy at that time. You know, he was a mid-card guy and he was not beating Steve Austin. So I think that's what would have happened, and I think, you know, he probably would have wrestled Ric Flair maybe in a singles match at SummerSlam. Instead of Flair feuding with Chris Jericho, the only reason that happened, again, was because Flair was just a guy, and he was a babyface on the roster, and they said, hey, why don't we feud him with Chris Jericho? If Austin doesn't walk out, I don't think that match happens. So you could have done Austin versus Flair, which I think would have been their first ever singles match on TV. I know they had a handicap match, I think in May. It was like Big Show and Ric Flair at a pay-per-view against Austin. So they wrestled, but they never really had a big like one-on-one Steve Austin versus Ric Flair match in WWE. I think there would have been some marquee value in that match. So I think that may well have been a SummerSlam match. I mean, and if you think about it, you know, that's a hell of a triple main event for SummerSlam. If you do Rock Brock, Shawn's big comeback against Triple H in the street fight, and then underneath them you have Steve Austin against Ric Flair, that's a hell of a top of the card right there. I think he beats Eddie at the King of the Ring. He beats maybe Benoit at the July pay-per-view, since Benoit had just come back and he turned on Austin and attacked him. So he goes through Eddie, he goes through Benoit, he gets the Flair at SummerSlam, he beats him there. Is Hogan an option? I don't think so, because I think if Austin wanted the match with Hogan, he would have gotten it at WrestleMania. I can't see Vince McMahon not doing that match at WrestleMania if both Hogan and Austin are on board to do the biggest match in wrestling history. Why would Vince not want to do that? So I do think there's probably truth to Austin really not being too fond of that match. And if Austin didn't want to wrestle Hogan at WrestleMania, you know, why would he suddenly be open to doing it at SummerSlam? So that's why I think things would have gone, you know, would have gone that way, at least into SummerSlam. The rest of the year, I don't know. I'd have to think about it and who else was on the roster at the time. But I don't think they would have gone into Austin and Lesnar until 03. Joey also has a buy or sell for us. Which decade would you buy and which would you sell of these three options as far as which had the best WWE Intercontinental Champions? The 1980s, the 1990s, or the 2000s? I'm an 80s and 90s guy. I think you guys know that. The title felt like it actually meant something back then. I know you've got guys like Randy Orton and RVD and even Ric Flair. He got a short run with the belt, right? It was like 2006 or something. But I'm not picking those guys over Mr. Perfect, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon, The Rock. I mean, all due respect to Randy Savage and Ricky Steamboat, who were much better world champions, okay, than Intercontinental. Not disrespecting them at all, but you look at that list of talent from the 90s that held that belt and some of the matches. It's not just like who was holding it, but look at the matches they had. Look at all those classic Intercontinental title matches from the 1990s. I bet you could pick off a lot more classic IC title matches in that decade than you can in the 80s. Or even in the 2000s. And there have been a lot of good ones in the 2000s too. Even in 2000. That ladder match with Jericho and Benoit was a great fucking match. I'm sure there have been tons of them. But I'm sorry. The really memorable classic ones. And the really great classic memorable Intercontinental Champions. Are from the 90s. That's it. So I'm buying on the 90s and I'm selling on the rest. David from Newark, we'll end with this. Buy or sell on who had the better year in 2000, The Rock or Triple H? That's a good one. That is a good one. I am a big fan of the year 2000 in WWE. I am a big fan of Triple H. I think that was the best iteration of Triple H. Him and The Rock carried that company on their shoulders. You had everybody else backing him up. You know, Kurt Angle and Chris Jericho and Rikishi and Too Cool and The Radicals and... And then you had Undertaker and those guys as well, up and down the card. It was a great year. It was a really great year for the company. Can I pick Kurt Angle? Because he had a hell of a year in 2000. He had one of the best rookie years of anybody in the history of the company. Him and Brock. And yeah, I mean, it might just be him and Brock. But of the two, honestly, I mean, Rock was on fire. In 2000, you know, with Austin on the shelf and out of the picture, The Rock was the big star. There's no doubt about it. He was a much bigger star than Triple H ever was. Not just in the company, mainstream. Like, everybody knew who The Rock was. Everybody loved The Rock. Maybe not everybody, but most people love The Rock. So he's going to get a lot of that love, but you know what? I'm going to buy on Triple H. I'm going to buy on Triple H and I'm going to sell on The Rock. If you look at that year 2000 for Triple H, The Rock was already a made man. The Rock won the world title in 1998. Triple H didn't win his first world title for almost a year after that. So The Rock was in the main event mix. He was the world... Look, The Rock was a three-time world champion by the beginning of 99. Talk about the hot potato that they played with that belt back then. He had already had his first WrestleMania main event months before Triple H even won his first title. So The Rock was already a headline guy. Triple H, I didn't buy him as a headline guy until that street fight with Foley at the Royal Rumble. That, to me, solidified him as a headliner, as a main eventer. Foley put him over a second time in that Hell in a Cell match, which I didn't think was as good. You go to WrestleMania, Triple H becomes the first heel, I think, ever in history to retain the championship in the WrestleMania main event. He beat The Rock, he beat Foley, he beat Big Show, because they wanted to save it for Backlash the next month when Austin came back. So yeah, Rock beat him, and then what happened after that? Triple H beat him. They went back and forth and played hot potato with that thing, you know, three or four different times in 2000. But I think when you look at the matches and you look at what that year meant to them both, it was Triple H's year. I mean, they both get credit for carrying the company, but it was Triple H's year. I mean, again, the matches with Foley, winning in the Mania main event, winning in that Iron Man match over The Rock, having the love triangle storyline with Stephanie and Kurt Angle, which was one of the best things they did that entire year, and it never got the proper blow-off that it deserved for a variety of different reasons. But that was a very entertaining storyline. That was a hell of a feud they had there. And then Austin did come back, And The Rock feuded, he kind of went off to feud with Rikishi after, Austin beat Rikishi, and then I think Rock feuded with Rikishi, right? I think that's what happened. I don't remember what Rock was actually doing in those last month or two. I know they had the big six-man Hell in a Cell that everybody was in at the end of the year, but Triple H, after all that, he transitioned into a feud with Steve Austin. And that was the top feud in the company. It was, you know, once they revealed that Triple H was the mastermind behind the car that ran down Austin, it was a big year for him. It was a coming out year in a lot of ways for Triple H. So I got to buy on him. I got to buy on him and sell on The Rock. You know, Rock, put it this way, Triple H needed what happened to him that year. He needed 2000 to happen a lot more than Rock did. Because Rock was a made man, Triple H was not. But after that, he was. Again, if you have questions, keep emailing them to me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. If I'm not able to get to it on the show, I do read everything you send me. Also, follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster. Don't forget to vote in our Raw poll every Monday night when the show goes off the air. Thumbs up, thumbs down, and leave us some love in iTunes and Stitcher. Don't forget you can listen to us now on Google Play Music if you have an Android device or if you want to listen on the web. Doesn't work yet for iPhone in Google Play Music for whatever reason, but I think they're working on that. Lots of different ways to keep in touch with this podcast. I want to thank everybody for their support. I want to thank everybody who contributed to the Joe Doering GoFundMe campaign. You can still do so. And we will be back with a brand new podcast next weekend. That'll be episode 440. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week. And we'll see you right back here next time. Take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
If WWE were a person, how would you describe them? It's just a very bizarre question. But these are the different options they gave as passionate, talented, funny, modest, except for all those did-you-know facts they pepper us with every single week. Kind, cheerful, sweet, surprising, adventurous, flexible. How the fuck can an organization be flexible? This is a real survey question here. You would think you were going on a date. I have no interest in dating WWE. They're clingy, they're painfully unfunny, and all they do is talk about themselves. They're not my type.
The Solomonster sounds off.
Since 2007, The Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.